ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 10 एंड टाइटल महाराज रघुगण मीट्स जड़ भरत। टेक्स्ट नंबर 23।
शस्ता विगोप्ता नृपति प्रजानाम यकिं करो वै नपि नास्ति पिष्टम् स्वधर्म आराधनम अच्युतस्य यदीह मानो विजहात्य घोगम्। शास्ता विगोप्ता नृपति प्रजानाम यकिं करो वै नपि नास्ति पिष्टम् स्वधर्मम् आराधनम अच्युतस्य यदीह मानो विजहात्य घोगम्। शास्ता विगोप्ता नृपति प्रजानाम यकिं करो वै नपि नास्ति पिष्टम् स्वधर्मम् आराधनम अच्युतस्य यदीयमानो विजहत्य घोघम्।
माताजी यस वर्ड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन। शास्ता द गवर्नर अभिगोप्ता अ वेल विशर ऑफ द सिटीजन एज अ फादर इज द वेल विशर ऑफ हिज चिल्ड्रन। नृपति द किंग प्रजानाम of the citizens, ya one who, king kara order carrier, why indeed, na not, pinashti pishtam grinds what is already ground, swadharmam one's own occupational duty, aradhanam worshipping. Achyutasya of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yad which yamanaha performing. Vijahati they are released from. Agam all kinds of sinful activity and faulty actions. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki translation.
My dear sir, you have said that relationship between the king and the subject or between the master and the servant are not eternal. But although such relationships are temporary, when a person takes the position of a king, his duty is to rule the citizens and punish those who are disobedient to the laws. By punishing them, he teaches the citizens to obey the laws of state. Again, you have said that punishing a person who is deaf and dumb is like chewing the chewed or grinding the pulp. That is to say, there is no benefit in it. However, if one is engaged in his own occupational duty as ordered by the Supreme Lord, his sinful activities are certainly diminished. Therefore, if one is engaged in his occupational duty by force, he benefits because he can vanquish all his sinful activities in that way. Purport. This argument offered by Maharaj Rahugana is certainly very effective. In his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.4, Sri Rupa Goswami says, Tasmat kenapi upayena mana Krishna niveshayat. Somehow or other, one should engage in Krishna consciousness. Actually, every living being is an eternal servant of Krishna. But due to forgetfulness, a living entity engages himself as an eternal servant of Maya. As long as one is engaged in Maya service, he cannot be happy. Our Krishna consciousness movement aims at engaging people in Lord Krishna's service. That will help them become freed from all material contaminations and sinful activity. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.10. Vita raga bhaya krodha. By becoming detached from material activities, we'll become freed from fear and anger. By austerity, one becomes purified and eligible to return home back to Godhead. The duty of king is to rule his citizens in such a way that they can become Krishna conscious. This would be very beneficial for everyone. Unfortunately, the king or president engages people in sense gratification instead of the Lord's service. And such activities are certainly not beneficial for anyone. King Rahugana tried to engage Jadabharat in carrying the palanquin, which is a form of sense gratification for the king. However, if one is engaged as a palanquin carrier in the Lord's service, that is certainly beneficial. In this godless civilization, if a president engages people somehow or other in devotional service or the awakening of Krishna consciousness, he renders the very best service to the citizens.
Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapidam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sva Padantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamsha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishnaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nidinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pranayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namine Gaura Tushe Nama He Krishna Karuna Sindhav Dina Bandhav Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Sri Radhe Rundavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Nilachala Nivasaya Nityaya Paramatmane Balbhadra Subhadrabhyam Jagannathaya Te Nama Vanja Kalpadrubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Bhevacha Padidanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदी गौरभक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Hare Krishna. So I seek blessings of all devotees assembled here, especially so many wonderful and senior Vaishnavas. I am feeling like crow sitting here in front of swans, and I am not qualified to speak. However, senior devotees asked me to speak, so as I'm trying to serve their instruction, I will try to speak something. So kindly give your blessings to me. So today we are discussing a very beautiful verse from 5th canto 10th chapter verse number 23. All of you can kindly repeat the translation. My dear sir, you have said that the relationship between the king and the subject, or between the master and the servant, are not eternal. But although such relationships are temporary, when a person takes the position of a king, his duty is to rule the citizens and punish those who are disobedient to the laws. By punishing them, he teaches the citizens to obey the laws of the state. Again, he has said that punishing a person who is a deaf and dumb is like chewing the chewed or grinding the pulp. That is to say, there is no benefit in it. However, if one is engaged in his occupational duty as ordered by the Supreme Lord, his sinful activities are certainly diminished. Therefore, if one is engaged in his occupational duty by force, he benefits, because he can vanquish all his sinful activities in that way. This is a very beautiful section in Srimad Bhagavatam where Maharaj Rahuvan meets Jadabharat. We have seen that how Maharaj Rahuvan was going on a pilgrimage, and he had a 4 palanquin carrier who were nicely carrying him, but all of a sudden there was one problem with one of them, so who couldn't carry further. So king sent this other palanquin carriers to find out an able person who can substitute the 4th one. And they went and searched, and they found Jadabharat. Jadabharat was looking very hefty, strong, young and strong. And they felt that he is the best person to carry king's palanquin. And literally they dragged him and forced him to carry king's palanquin. And when the 4 of them started carrying palanquin, Jadabharat, being very self-realized and being very concerned about every living entity, when he was walking, he realized and he saw that there are ants on the way. So he was very careful in walking. Whereas other 3 guys were, just walking without caring for ants and all this thing. Naturally, because of that, there was disharmony. So, because of that, there were some jolts on the palanquin. So when Maharaj Rahuvan saw that, his palanquin is not carried properly, rather he is getting disturbed and troubled, immediately Maharaj Rahugan became angry. And this is the first thing what happens. If one thinks himself to be the controller, proprietor, enjoyer, master, and when he thinks that there is some inconvenience, immediately first reaction is one becomes angry. So Maharaj Rahugan became very, very angry on Jadabharat, and he started chastising. He said, why are you not carrying my palanquin properly? You be better careful. I tried to threaten him. All the palanquin carriers, three of them, other, they became very frightened. Immediately said, my dear King Rahugan, actually we are very careful in our duties. We are not neglectful. We are very carefully, nicely carrying. You just see how nicely we carried you for such a long distance. Now only problem is that this new person has come and he is not able to walk swiftly and properly. So actually it is the fault of this new person. So kindly don't chastise us, chastise that new guy. So when Raghuna saw that actually this, after even chastising, the palanquin didn't go properly, then he again looked at Jadabharat, who was very fat, strong, hefty, and then he started criticizing him in a sarcastic manner. Actually, if you directly criticize, it is painful. But if you criticize in a very sarcastic manner, it is very painful, extremely painful. So, Raghuna spoke to Jadabharat. My dear brother, you appear to be very fatigued because of carrying long distance alone. So you are saying that you are appearing fatigued. Actually, you are not at all fatigued. And he said that you are carrying for long distance. As you had just started carrying. There was not a long distance. And he said you are carrying alone. Actually, there were other people also. So he was sarcastically making comments. And due to old age and frail body, you have been gradually been very troubled. And he was telling that actually he was young bodied and not frail body, and he was not old. But sarcastically he was saying. And then he said, are others not cooperating with you? That's why, you know, there is problem in carrying the palanquin. So these are natural reactions of a conditioned soul. When things don't go his way, he becomes angry, or sometimes he may chastise in a sarcastic manner. When Jadabharat was chastised in a sarcastic manner, Jadabharat was actually self-realized, a very saintly person. All other guys were very disturbed, but Jadabharat was not at all disturbed. And without being disturbed, without being affected, despite sarcastic criticism, Rahugun continued. Later on, when palanquin was, you know, still not being carried properly, Rahugun became exceedingly angry and he started shouting with a voice filled with anger. And he said, you rascal, don't you know that I am your master? I am trying to tell you, you don't understand it. Since you are disregarding my instructions by not carrying out my orders properly, I shall punish you as Yamaraj does. I will give you proper treatment so that you will come to your senses and do the correct thing. So this is, you know, when one becomes angry, one tries to threaten and chastise. So in spite of all this serious chastisement, actually any ordinary person would have been there, you would have been immediately shaken up, seeing the anger of, you know, Rahugana. And Rahugana is not an ordinary person, he is a king. Imagine, ordinary person chastises, we may take it lightly. If a king who is a powerful person, he is a kshatriya, he can just, if he desires, he can just chop up your head. Such a person becomes angry and chastises, who can stand in front of it? So all the other palanquin carriers were extremely afraid. But Jadabharat was completely fearless, very peaceful, and in a very smiling way, Jadabharat spoke to Rahugana. And he said, my dear sir, it is a fact. What you have said is true. You have said that I have not labored hard. Yes, I have not at all labored hard. Because body is the carrier, not I, who am detached. The body may be fat or thin, but a learned man would not say such a thing about soul. Since I am not the body, I didn't become affected by hearing your chastisement either. And he said that, my dear sir, you are thinking that you are master because of which you are trying to order me. But even this attitude is not correct. Today, You are master and I am your servant. But tomorrow, our positions may be reversed. Tomorrow I may become master and you may become my servant. Actually, in this world, who is anyway master? Everybody is forced to act according to laws of nature. And in this way, I understand that actually everyone is ultimately servant only. And as far as your punishment is concerned, you are thinking that you will punish me like a Yamaraj, but actually I am self-realized. So your punishing me is like beating a dead horse. If you beat a dead horse, there is no use. Or here it is said, you know, grinding the pulp, there is no use. Or chewing the chewed, there is no use of it. So all your, you know, punishment, all this is useless. So as soon as, you know, Jadabhara spoke in a very smiling way, a firm way, clear way, these beautiful spiritual instructions, Rahugana got shaken up. And his ahankar, Jai Shishi Radha Rajbihari ki, Jai Shri Gau Nitai ki, Jai Shishi Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Jai Shila Prabhupada ki, Jai. So, Rahugana realized that this Jadabharat is not ordinary person. And he is speaking such a learned words. And he is fearless. Who can stand? So immediately understand by the behavior that he is a very exalted person. Actually, who is exalted and who is ordinary can be judged by their behavior. Not just by titles and degrees. Sometimes people, we see many times people, when we are traveling train, when we start discussing about Bhagavad, they say, I am also Brahmana, you know. They remove their Brahman thread and say, I am also Brahmana. As a Brahmana or not Brahmana, it's not by just, you know, thread, but by qualification, by qualities. So Jadabharat was actually appearing like a Jada, but when he spoke, the way he spoke and the way he behaved, the way he tolerated and the way he was related, immediately Jadabharat, this Rahugana could understand that he is a saintly person. And seeing that, immediately he became, you know, humbled. Immediately he jumped from the palanquin, fall flat, and offered obeisances to Jadabharat. And he spoke a very beautiful verse, which was just few days back in our discussion here. And that is 17th verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, very famous verse. So Rahugana says, Naham vishanke suraraja vajran, na trakshasula na yamasya dandat, na agni arka soma nila vitappa astrat, shankhe brisham brahma kulava manat. He said, my dear great personality, I am not afraid of Sura Raja Vajran, I am not afraid of thunderbolt of Indra, na trakshasula na yamasya dandat, I am not afraid of Trishul of Lord Shiva or punishment of Yamaraj. Na agni arka soma anila vitap astrat. Nor I am afraid of the weapons of agni, sun, moon, wind, or vitap kuvera. So I am not afraid of any one of them or their weapons. Shankhe brusham. However, I am very much afraid of Brahma Kula Omna. Very much afraid of offending a great Brahmana like you. So immediately fall flat and beg forgiveness. Please forgive me. So sometimes unknowingly we may commit offenses. But here we learn from Maharaj Rahugana how to deal when we offend others. When we offend others, we don't have to justify. Rather, one should take a humble role and fall flat and offer obeisance and beg forgiveness. My dear sir, kindly forgive me. And a saintly person will immediately forgive. So here we see how, you know, this Rahugana is begging forgiveness and he is glorifying Jadabharat. Actually, Rahugana is an example of ideal disciple. This is how a disciple should deal. And disciple's relationship with spiritual master should be very honest. Here we see honest relationship between Maharaj Rahugana and Jadabharat. So Rahugana is begging forgiveness from Jadabharat. He is offering dandavats, giving proper respects. And then After doing that, he is humbly and submissively inquiring. Actually, what Jadabharat spoke to Rahuguna, Rahuguna didn't understand everything. But yet, just he understood from his behavior that he is a great saintly person. And he understood that the talk which he was speaking seems to be very philosophical and very based on Shastras. So he didn't understand, nor he accepted it. He didn't agree with what Jadabharat said. Though he humbled down himself, he begged forgiveness, but yet he had doubts. So this is a sign of a sincere disciple. Sometimes the guru or superiors may give instructions. We may not understand, fine, but that should be humbly clarified. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. So here we see this Rahuguna is doing pranipat, surrendering at lotus feet of Jadabharat, and later his pariprashnan, he is inquiring submissively. So we see how Rahuguna, Jadabharat had explained how I am not his body, I am spirit soul, and I am not affected by all these things. And he explained how ultimately we are all servants. Who is king, who is master, who is servant, you know, all this he had spoken. But Rahuguna didn't understand all these things, so he inquired. So he is saying that so my dear sir, I am very much attached to worldly life and I have become blind to spiritual knowledge. So I beg you now that please tell me how can I advance in my spiritual path. So he is seeing his own faults. So when we are in front of a superior person, we should look over our own faults and not try to find faults with the superior person. Humility means to appreciate others and to find fault with oneself. False ego means to find faults with others and appreciate oneself. So especially to advance in Krishna consciousness, one has to be very humble. So here we see how Rahuguna is taking a very humble role. He is appreciating Jadabharat and he is finding faults in himself. He is saying, I am blind to spiritual knowledge. I don't know anything. I am attached to worldly life. So please kindly tell me how I can advance in spiritual life. And then later on he is telling his practical questions. He said, my dear Jadabharat, you are saying that, you know, I am this body, I am not this body and spirit soul, I am not affected by body and all this thing. But I say that actually we get affected by body. And he gave a very wonderful example. In previous verses we saw how Jadabharat gave example of rice and milk in a pot. If rice and milk is there in a pot, rice and milk is like a soul, pot is like a body. He said when pot gets heated up, rice and milk also get affected. Similarly, when this body gets affected, mind and soul also gets affected. So in day-to-day life we see, we may say that, oh, I am not affected by bodily things, but actually we get affected. How is it possible that soul can be completely detached from material conditions? So I feel that soul gets affected by this all material things. So this was the first argument he explained, that you are saying that soul is different from body and it's not affected from material circumstances. But he gave the analogy of milk and rice in a pot and he said how no, it is affected. And that is a practical experience we have. When there are material problems, we get affected mentally, physically, our life becomes completely tormented. Then second argument he gave, and here we are saying today is about second argument. He is saying, my dear Jadabharat, you are saying that, you know, in this world relationships are temporary. Who is master, who is servant, who is king, who is subordinate, who is, you know, all these are temporary. But actually, since a person has taken role of king, he has to do his duty. And his duty is to punish the citizens and to make sure that they obey the laws of God. It's duty of king to punish even a madman for his good. You have said that there is no use punishing who is mad. Another, so he's saying that relationship temporarily, so we should not take those seriously. And second thing, he's saying, actually Jadbar was looking like a madman. And Jadbar said, you are instructing a deaf and dumb person, is useless. But then Raghuna is saying, no sir, actually, since you said that there is no use in punishing one who is mad, however, since one becomes purified of past sinful reactions by engaging his occupational duties, even if one is engaged by force, he is benefited. So even if mad is engaged forcefully, no problem, it will be his benefit. And if king does his duty, king will be also purified. If king doesn't do his duty of punishing the citizens, rather king will be also afflicted by the sinful reactions. And also the person who is being disobedient and he is not doing his occupational duties properly, he will be also affected. So, so after hearing all this, actually anybody in a bodily concept life hears this arguments of Raghuna, he will be convinced that what Raghuna is saying is right actually. But later on we see how Jadbhart clarifies this all misconceptions very powerfully. Actually, all contradictions can be very easily resolved by a realized person. So Jadbhart is very realized and he very nicely clarifies Jadbhart of, you know, all his misconceptions. So he explains how, you know, that attachment of body and soul. Prabhupada gives very nice purport to this verse to clarify the misconception of Raghuna. He said that, you know, he gives the example of car and a driver. Car and driver, they are two separate things. If something happens to car, driver gets affected. If you know, suppose a glass of a car gets broken, the driver or the owner of the car becomes terribly affected. His heart also breaks, practically, you know. Nothing has happened to him, only car's glasses have broken, but yet his heart is breaking. Why? His heart is breaking because he is attached to the car. So Jadbhart explains that the pains of this world and the inconvenience for the body and mind affect the soul only to the degree it is attached. But if one is detached, then he is not affected. So to the degree we are in the bodily concept life, to the degree we are attached, to that degree only one is affected from inconvenience of this material world, honor and insult of this world. And second, so in this way he clarified his first misconception. He counteracted the analogy of milk and pot. The second thing he is mentioning is about master and servant. How master's or king's duty is to punish the subordinate, or, you know, to make sure he follows the laws, you know. And then he explains this about, you know, very beautiful analogy he gives. He says that lamp, he gives the analogy of a lamp. Lamp is there. When lamp burns very nicely, it enlightens the surrounding. But if lamp is not burning nicely, the wick is not proper, then what happens? It produces a lot of smoke and the lantern becomes dark. And instead of enlightening, there is no light actually. Just darkness. So it just burns. And there is no positive result of it. And Raghuna, Jadbhart explains about lamp or wick burning properly and wick improper burning. He says that mind, one whose mind is controlled and is detached from sense gratification, is actually like a lamp burning properly and it can enlighten. When person is detached from sense gratification, his mind and senses are controlled, and then he does his services nicely, then he can benefit the masses. However, once his mind and senses are uncontrolled, then he just creates smoke and doesn't benefit everyone. Similarly, you may be giving very nice analogy that you are a king and your duty is king, but unfortunately, my dear King Raghuna, you are attached and your bodily concept of life, and you are foolishly thinking yourself to be controller, enjoyer, proprietor, which is not the real case. So this talks of master servant comes on a bodily platform and is out of ignorance. So what you are speaking may be appear learned and wise, but my dear Rahuguna, understand you are a fool number one. That is what in his sense Jadabhar is telling. Actually, this is what even we see discussion between Krishna and Arjuna. In the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is appearing to give very intelligent arguments, powerful arguments. But then Krishna smashes him. He said, my dear Arjuna, it appears that you are speaking as if very learned. But let me know you, let me tell you that you are fool number one. You may be speaking wise words, but actually you are just on bodily concept of life. You are thinking yourself to body, and everybody in relation with body is mind, and you are acting on that platform. Though you may be speaking on high lofty things, you are acting on a bodily platform. Similarly, Rahuguna was speaking very lofty words, that he is a king, he is a representative of God, and as if he is speaking very enlightened, but actually he was in bodily concept of life, and driven by false ego. I am the master, and everybody is supposed to serve me. I am the controller, everybody should obey me. So this is not what a representative of God is supposed to do. Representative of God is not supposed to be driven by his own false ego, but supposed to be driven by the will of Lord and work for the benefit of Lord. So sometimes we see the people may speak right philosophy, but yet it doesn't have effect, proper effect. Rather, it may have counterproductive effect. When people who are speaking, they don't have sufficient adhikar or maturity or no realizations of what they are speaking. Once there was one brahmachari. He was preaching to a young beautiful girl, and lot of time passed, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. A senior devotee is saying, my dear Prabhu, please come, Now we have to go to another place for book distribution. He said, no, Mahaprabhu has said we have to deliver everyone, how can we leave some suffering souls, We have to be compassionate on them, we have to be caring for them, we have to be merciful, we have to enlighten them. And we are not anyway bodies, why should we discriminate based on body? Anyway, Krishna says we are not body, Prabhupada, every purport is telling we are not body. So we should not discriminate, we should give this mercy to everyone. So this brahmachari was speaking very learned word, that is saying we should not discriminate between man and woman. But actually, question is, are we on that platform? We are on bodily platform, we think ourselves to be man, others to be woman. If we are on this bodily platform, we cannot speak on lofty words and then act beyond our adhikar. And if we act beyond our adhikar, then what happens is naturally the results are not very wonderful. So he may be speaking proper philosophy that I am not this body, but have we realized it? Similarly here, this Rahuguna is telling that I am a representative of God, I am a king, it's my duty, so I am punishing it. But actually question is, whether are we understanding what is meaning of being representative of God? And are we actually representing God, or are we actually representing our false ego? That is the important question to be asked. So if we are on a bodily platform, we have to follow the etiquettes and behave accordingly. So generally, a conditioned soul, when he comes to this material world, he comes to be independent God and want to become God himself. Therefore, naturally, his actions are driven by the false ego. I am God. I am the center. I am the controller. I am proprietor. I am enjoyer. I am the in charge here, When I was given responsibilities in ISKCON Calcutta, I was thinking I am the in charge. And I was ordering everyone, do this, do that. And I realized that everybody is frustrated, and I am also frustrated by that. When we try to be in charge and start ordering, others will get frustrated. Not only others will get frustrated, we will also get frustrated. Then I was thinking, this ordering business doesn't work, Maybe I should develop friendship with people so that if they become, I can be friends with them, then I can get lot of things done through them, So again, when I started being friends, I realized that people are taking undue advantage and this friendship doesn't work. Rather, a lot of things, you know, start going mess. Then I was wondering what to do. Then actually superiors told me that, my dear Prabhu, you are not the master. You are not the control. You are not the proprietor. You are Gopi Bharatur Pad Kamalar Das 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 Anudas. You are servant of devotees of Krishna. So, actually that is our constitutional position. That we are the servant of Krishna. We are servant of devotees. We are servant. So, a king or a authority or a parents who are in leadership role, this representing God means trying to be a servant. Servant of Lord and servant of all those whom they are serving. Not just trying to be controller, proprietor, enjoyer, or cruel taskmaster. Actually, these things will not work. Rather, one should always think, how I can serve better. And when we deeply imbibe this servitude, and always try to serve, whomever, in whatever role we are put in whatever situation, rather sincere devotee always think that in this situation, in this role, how best I can serve devotees, how best I can serve Krishna, how best I can please Hari Guru and Vaishnavas. When one has that consciousness, then everything falls at right place, because this is actually our constitutional position. And then as a servant, sometimes in relationships, if there is need that we need to be friends with someone, okay, one can be friends with someone. And in relationship, suppose there is need that we need to take an authoritative position, we can take an authoritative position. But in all situations, one should know that we are servant. As a friend, in a friendship also, we should know, I am servant of this Prabhu and I should serve him nicely. And even if we have authoritative position, one should know that I am servant. And we should use whatever facilities or authority is given in order to serve for their welfare. And we see same thing, even Krishna following. If you see Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, you see the picture. As you Krishna, what role he is taking? He is taking the role of a servant. He is a chariot driver. And Arjuna is instructing Krishna, my dear Krishna, take me at the center of the battlefield. I want to see who all have come, assembled to fight with us. So Krishna is a humble servant. He just takes the chariot in front of Dronacharya, Bhishma and all the other generals of Kaurava army. And when Arjuna saw so many powerful personalities, and more important, when he saw his all near and dear ones have assembled in front of him to fight against him, immediately his heart melted because of attachment to his near and dear one. And then his body started shaking. His voice started getting choked up. His hair stood on end. His tears started coming in his eyes. His Gandiva started falling apart and started losing his peace of mind. And immediately he was confused. He didn't know what to do. And then he started speaking. He spoke so many words. And as a friend, because Arjuna wanted someone, his friend, to hear him, so he heard all the arguments. But Krishna didn't give any advice or didn't, he just heard. And after all advising, we saw how Arjuna got completely bewildered, confused. And then he said, my dear Krishna, now let us give up our this friendly relationship. These friendly talks are not very helpful. Now I become surrender disciple unto you. You become my guru and please kindly instruct me. Shishyastyam shadimam tam prapannam. So I surrender unto your lotus feet. Now tell me, nishitam bruhi tanme, what is ultimate good for me? Tell me. So we see how Krishna is taking the role of a servant. And then when Arjuna wanted, he is taking the role of a friend. And then when Arjuna wanted that Krishna take the role of a authority, Krishna take a role of guru, then Krishna is taking a role of a guru. And then he is instructing. It's not that we don't say that Krishna in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita only said, Arjuna, now hear Bhagavad Gita from me, Sit peacefully. You are a fool, you are a rascal, you don't know anything, Hear from me first and then you fight. He didn't say. Rather he was acting as a servant. And then he was acting as friend, but as a service to Arjuna. And then he was acting as a guru, as a service to Arjuna. So in all situation, he was always a servant. So sometimes we may take authoritative position, but we may forget that we are servant. And we may forget to serve, take care of needs and concerns of subordinates. Rather act as a cruel taskmaster for our own selfish agendas. Which is not actually being properly representing God. Proper representing God means we should follow in the footstep of God. Seeing how God serves. Actually once, we see actually in this material world, this is a common problem. The problem, especially relationship problem between, you know, master and servant, authority and subordinate, husband and wife, parents and children. These are common problems in this world. Because in this world, everything is driven by false ego. Which is actually, if everything is driven by false, everything goes off track. Everything falls, starts falling wrong. If first step is wrong, then whatever step further you take, everything becomes wrong. So here in this material world, we do fundamental mistake, thinking that I am this body, everything in relation with body is mine, I am the controller, I am proprietor, I am enjoyer, everybody should follow me. It's actually the false domain, it's just based on ahankar. So if you want to set things right, we have to see from spiritual perspective. Bhaktivedanta Maharaj says, actually, real world is a spiritual world, and real laws are there in spiritual world. If you want things to happen nicely in the material world, we have to see how things happen in the spiritual realm and replicate that in the material realm. And when we follow the spiritual laws here, then we'll no longer be in material world. We can experience we are in spiritual world itself. Like now we see Raghuguna is explained to Jadabharat, and after few chapters you will find the forest of material enjoyment comes and how living entity suffers. So if one gets driven by false ego, naturally one will be in forest of material enjoyment, where one will suffer terribly and one will have to just weep and cry. Whereas one lives by the laws of the spiritual world, principles governing the spiritual realm, will no longer be in forest of material enjoyment. Remaining in material world, we can be in forest of Vrindavan, and we can experience greater joys and greatest ecstasies. And even those relationships, apparently we may, which are, no, very negative, normally in the material world, we'll see that there will be, no, transform. Rather, when one lives by spiritual principles, we can see the authority and subordinate having most intimate and wonderful relationship, husband and wife, and, no, parents and children having very wonderful relationships. So, Bhaktivedanta Maharaj is explaining that, you know, why most of the marriages in today's world fail. He is saying the marriages fail because men are behaving like women. Men don't know how to behave like men. So if men behave like women and two women vying for control stay together, naturally they are going to fights and problems. So if a family has to work, men has to behave like men. Similarly, authority has to become like authority. Parents have to behave like parents. And how to behave, that we can learn from spiritual realm. That we can learn from Krishna himself. Have you seen spiritual world? In spiritual world also there are families. In spiritual world everything is there. So in, we see Krishna, actually in spiritual world Krishna is only male. And everybody else is a Prakriti. How does Krishna behave? Krishna has two states of behavior. One state is called Atmarama state. Atmarama state means where Krishna is Atmaram. He is self-satisfied, he doesn't need anyone. Like here we see the picture, beautiful picture. Krishna in form of Mahavishnu is lying, and from his navel, Brahma is coming. And he is not taking help of even Lakshmiji. So he is completely, he doesn't need anyone. That is his Atmarama state. He is completely self-satisfied. However, Krishna himself expands to relate with his devotees. That is called a Leela. And in Leela, how Krishna behaves? Krishna doesn't behave in Leela as Atmaram. He behaves very lovingly and very affectionately with devotees. And if you understand from Tattva point of view, Krishna is Supreme Person of Godhead. But if we see his Leela, in Leela we see devotees are supreme. In Radha and Krishna, who is supreme? in Leelas. Krishna, Radha is supreme personality. Sometimes Krishna has to take dust from the lotus feet of Radharani. When Radha, you know, becomes little, you know, annoyed with Krishna, you know, and there is in Vrindavan, we see there is Man Mandir, Man Leela, you know, Krishna has to take dust off. You know? Or if you see Krishna's relationship with Mother Yashoda, Krishna may be supreme person, tattva wise, but in Leela, devotees are supreme. How Krishna relates with Mother Yashoda? Like, you know, Mother Yashoda is binding Krishna. Or Mother, when Krishna wants to go out for herding cows, Mother Yashoda is calling him back and saying, "My dear Krishna, wait, let me put your turban nicely." Krishna is waiting. And then he goes, and then again Mother Yashoda calls him back, that, "My dear Krishna, maybe you are, you know, I need to put your dhoti properly, come here back." So again he comes back, and again Mother Yashoda ties dhoti nicely. And then again Krishna is about to go, and then again Mother Yashoda calls, "My dear Krishna, I want to wear little more ornaments to you." And he says, "Come back again." Again he wears. And then again Krishna goes. And again Mother Yashoda calls, "My dear Krishna, please come back, you know. I think I forgot to put some kajal and some black dots, you know." And then Krishna puts. So actually, we see Krishna is a supreme person. But how does he deal with Mother Yashoda? He doesn't say, "My dear mother, enough of it, no, forget it. Let me go now, forget it." No? He doesn't say. Rather, Krishna deals with devotees according to their moods. Ye yatha mam prapadante. How their devotee relates, Krishna also relates them in that way. And he deals very lovingly and affectionately, in a very gentle and caring way. He is not being like a taskmaster or we have idea of a controller or proprietor or enjoyer. He is not demanding people, "You do like this, do like that." Rather, he deals with devotees in their terms. So we see that, you know, different devotees are in different rasa. Mother Yashoda is in which rasa? Vatsal rasa. So Mother Yashoda wants to serve Krishna in the mood of child. So Krishna is taking the role of a child. Similarly, gopis are thinking Krishna to be their lover. So Krishna is taking the role of lover. So Daruka is thinking Krishna is master. So Krishna is taking the role of master. Or Sridhama, Sudama, they are thinking Krishna to be their friend. So Krishna is taking the role of their friend. So different devotees and different rasa, and Krishna reciprocates with them according to their rasa. In which rasa is Krishna? Krishna is Rasaraj. He is not in any rasa. He is source of all rasas. And he relates with devotees and completely satisfies them. And he doesn't exploit anyone. Rather, all his actions and all just to give pleasure to devotees. And therefore, devotee gets captivated by his loving exchanges. And therefore, they want to surrender themselves completely and serve with their heart and soul. So, this is actually male. How male has to deal with Prakriti. So, therefore, it is that actually we are all Prakriti. So, to behave like a male, it is not natural. Therefore, there is training required. So, therefore, in Varnashrama, there is training, Brahmacharya Ashram. So, Brahmacharya Ashram is training where one can be trained to behave like a man. One of the characteristics of man is that he can be self-satisfied. So, one has to be trained to control one's mind and senses by engaging in Krishna service, by engaging in chanting, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare." By studying scriptures, by submissively following spiritual master and offering all respects to spiritual master and superiors. Brahmacharya has to be very humble and submissive. When one is humble and submissive, then he can control mind and senses. And then he can, you know, be completely happy and satisfied. So this is a Brahmacharya training. So one is Brahmacharya, then he can be a Grahastha. One who has no training in being Brahmacharya, proper with mind and sense, then he cannot be a proper Grahastha. Prabhupada said, first class Brahmachari can become first class Grahastha. And first class Grahastha can become first class Vanaprastha. And then first class Sannyasi. But if there is no training to be first class Brahmachari, then there cannot be proper Grahasthas. And there is no proper Grahastha, there is no question of any other proper ashram. So this training is very important. When one trains, one can be satisfied in any situation. And one is self-satisfied with simple things in service to Krishna, in his relation with Krishna, in relation with spiritual master in relation with holy name, in relation with Bhagavatam, one is completely satisfied, then he can deal with others in their terms. If he himself is disturbed, he cannot deal with others in their terms. He himself disturbed, if somebody comes, he will just bang him, smash him. And if you just bang and smash, you shout and yell, what kind of relation is there? So husband has to be spiritually very mature. And then he has to deal with wife very affectionately, lovingly, caringly, understanding the needs. Similarly, mother, father, they have to be very caring to their children. They cannot be, you know, just thinking that we are the boss here and everybody should obey. That is not the way things work. That is just a false ego. Similarly, authority, superiors, they have to be very sensitive, they have to be very gentle in the way they take care of the subordinates. Then actually things will work very nice. And then we can see the relationship become very sweet and we can experience spiritual right here. So, here we are seeing that Rahuguna is telling that I am a king and it's my duty to punish. Actually, but here later on Jadabharata is telling that, my dear sir, you are just being carried away by your false ego. So many times actually when there are conflict between authority, subordinate, husband, wife, you know, parents, you know, mostly it's because of false ego. If, however, it's a responsibility of superiors to take a humble role and to rectify themselves. Actually, subordinates follow superior. Similarly, wife follows husband. Children follow parents. In conflict of husband-wife, if husband takes a humble role, immediately wife will be also humble. If husband is arrogant and intolerant, wife will be also arrogant. Wife will also follow husband. She will be also arrogant, she will be also intolerant, she will be unsubmissive, and there will be Kurukshetra war. It has to be very... Similarly, children's. How we deal with children's? We can't be fighting with children's. Rather, we have to be very mature in dealing. So there are... I'll just end in 5 minutes by telling, because now recently from today onwards we are having this seminar on child protection. So it's very important how we take care of children, how we protect. So there are 4 types of parents. So first type of parents are called as, you know, neglectful parents. They hardly give time to their children. They don't show them enough love and affection, nor do they discipline. And unfortunately, in modern times, such parents' number is increasing. People are so busy in their own jobs and own this thing, they have no time for parents. One, I heard a very shocking story. He said, once, you know, there was one boy. Actually, children need love and affection, need time of parents. So he saw how, you know, his father was always busy, he always wanted a time of father, but you know, he never got it. So one day, somehow or other, he caught hold of father and said, my dear father, I understand you are very busy. So can you tell me, how much salary do you earn and how much money do you get in 1 hour? Father was, you know, didn't take child seriously. But later when child was very much pushing, he told, actually I get $1,000 in 1 hour. $100 in 1 hour. Then he said, okay, thank you very much, you know. And later on, the child was, you know, every day saving some money. And when he had got $100, then he went to father and said, my dear father, take this $100 and kindly give me 1 hour. I need your 1 hour very much, you know. So sometimes parents become so busy, they don't know, they don't take care, they don't understand the needs. This is not what being a representative of God. We see God is, Krishna is so gentle, so sensitive, and so loving and so kind. So being representative of God, parents also have to be, you know, very, you know, and Krishna, we see, is always available to for his devotees. Krishna is marrying 16,108 wives, but he is making 16,108 palaces, and he is there all the time with everyone simultaneously. He is always available. So these are first type of parents, neglectful parents. Unfortunately, they are the they are irresponsible and they are not fit to be parents. Second type of parents are called permissive parents. Permissive means they just allow children to do whatever they want. Child says this, okay, yes for everything. because they are very afraid. If they say no, maybe child will become rebellious. If they say no, maybe child will think that my parents don't love me, and they are very they are sentimental. So this is they are sentimental parents. But actually these parents also can't do much good, because only love and no proper discipline spoils the child. Spare the rod and spoil the child. There is a lalayat panchavarshani, tadayat dashavarshani. There is a role of both love and discipline. There has to be balance. So these permissive parents, they never take any, take discipline. They only so-called love. So their love is sentimental, and that spoils the child. Third kind of parents are authoritarian parents. They are always, showing the stick. You should follow me. I am your mother. I am your father. How dare you not follow? How you are disobedient? Don't you understand? Learn something. See that child. He is so obedient to his parents. How are you? You are such a disobedient, And many times in India, people say, just see, follow the example of Lord Ram, How obedient he was to Dashrath, You have to be like Ram. Follow me like Lord Ram. So they will quote different scriptures and try to push that how they have to follow. But actually, as long as they are little weak, they may keep on following. But later on when they grow, they become completely, disobedient and rebellious. And later on they don't even talk to their parents. And very serious relationship problems. And the fourth type of parents, actually they are ideal parents. They are authoritative parents, authorized parents. Those who are mature, who know how to do actually properly parenting based on proper Krishna conscious culture. So they give a lot of time to their children, knowing that children need that time. They shower a lot of love and affection to the children. Real protection means actually showering a lot of love and affection. Not just protecting with rules and regulation, but real love showing. And when children feel cared for, love, happy, then actually they can develop properly physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, everything they can grow nicely. Many times we see that parents have complained that my children are not become devotees. Why? Because mostly they are authoritative, but they don't know art of taking care of children. And so if children are very nicely taken care, and one can get guidance how to take care of children. One has to give time, show love and affection. At the same time, there is need to limit. We cannot give unrestricted freedom to children because it's dangerous. So one should give limited freedom, and one should also explain to children why there are limits. Children, by nature, are inquisitive. Rather, that is nature of human being. Human being, nature is to inquire. So superiors have to always fulfill the, clarify whatever inquiries are there, and humbly. Not just say, what nonsense question are you, forget it, Just do it. I told you, You rascal, why are you troubling me, So, if you call them fool, they will behave like fool. And then one will wonder, why is he behaving like so foolishly, You're calling him like fool, so naturally he's behaving. So, one has to know how to actually properly deal. So, one has to explain. If you tell children what to do, what not to do, you have to explain the reasons. And when their reasons are explained, and when they see actually you are always very loving and kind and you are always giving them time, so naturally they will be obedient. And naturally, the relationship will be wonderful. So coming back to the today's verse, here Raghuna is asking Maharaj, Maharaj Raghuna is asking Jadbharat, my dear Jadbharat, you are saying that relationship between king and subject or between master and servant are not eternal, but although such relationships are temporary, when a person takes a position of king, his duty is to rule the citizens and punish those who are disobedient to laws. By punishing them, he teaches the citizens to obey the laws of the state. Again, you have said that punishing a person who is deaf and dumb is like chewing the chewed or grinding the pulp. That is to say, there is no benefit of it. However, if one is engaged in his own occupational duty as ordered by Supreme Lord, his sinful activities are certainly diminished. Therefore, if one is engaged in his occupational duty by force, he benefits because he can be vanquished all his sinful activities in that way. So this is the doubt he had asked, and later verse we saw how Jada Bharat clarifies this nicely. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki itai go premanande hari hari go. Kindly forgive me, I think time has exceeded. Hare Krishna.